G'day, welcome back to English History Fact and Fiction, episode the 339th, Elizabeth Chudleigh, part 2. My name's Dick Newman, let's get on with it. Yes, I know, my dear listener, we could all listen to that all day. Marvellous stuff there. It was, of course, Telestri, Queen of the Amazon, written by Maria Antonia Malpergis. Now, Elizabeth's going to meet Maria Antonia today in this episode, I think we should get through to that. So, we'll say g'day to Maria again at the right time. Last week, we left it with Elizabeth being married to Augustus. Kind of, we think. It's pretty tricky, isn't it? Hard to tell sometimes with the legislation being crap. But she also had a new boyfriend, the Duke Pierpoint. We also left her being a DIY property developer, and she is not bad at this game. Let me tell you, she is not bad at it at all. Now, what she had a look at was Knightsbridge, which at that time was just a green with a maypole on it. That's all it was. Elizabeth is looking specifically at a rat-infested tavern, a place infested with petty crims, footpads, highwaymen and their runners who keep a lookout for innocent prey. Now, the reason those type of guys hang out there is the view, marvellous view. It looks over Hyde Park, you can see all the way to Chelsea. So she's going to buy that and redevelop it, and the whole place will catch on. And Elizabeth has gotten in on the ground floor with several purchases of land and some buildings, including Chudleigh House she'll build there, which has got three storage stables, kitchens, Venetian-style windows. It's filled with fine furniture and curiosities and objets d'art, all done with great taste. It's not a house for a single lady, but a house for a couple who intend to do lots of entertaining. Horace Walpole hated it, but look, he hates anything Elizabeth, including Elizabeth, of course, herself. And he might be just a tad jealous. Oh, there's too many items to collect dust, he says. Yeah, the man with 4,000 objets d'art himself. On the surface, Elizabeth is doing very well indeed, with a fine mansion bearing her name, Chudleigh. But without a wedding ring from the Duke, nothing is secure. Augustus's elder brother, George, who is still on death's door, has just been appointed ambassador to Madrid, and that has focused Elizabeth on the Harvey title again. The year is 1759, our insecure Elizabeth is 37. It seems she is crazy for the Duke, but if Augustus was to inherit, then that would be security for Elizabeth. It seems at this time, security is the most important thing for her. Off she goes on a kind of clandestine visit to see the ancient Reverend Tom Amos. What she wants is a register. Bring in local attorney James Spearing, and old John Merrill is also sent for. The attorney's brought a new register book, and Tom Amos will write up the marriage in that register and sign. Tom can die a few weeks later, and the register is taken to John Merrill. Augustus Harvey, meantime, is banging like a bunny. Well, that's all he does, isn't it, really? Oh, and be a mighty war hero. Portuguese nuns now. Yes, that's what he's into, trying the Portuguese nuns. And he's got a Frenchy woman on board his ship. He will be abducted on the orders of a widow who wanted a darn good rogering, and on. Yeah, lots of stories about him. But it is a 7-year war, so he's got to work. He's got to do some work. He fought for Admiral Byng at Menorca, which was that one that scored Byng the death penalty. Totally undeserved. For some, though, this is the birth of the British Empire. An act of nastiness giving them a psychological advantage over other Europeans who don't go around executing their admirals. Augustus will, once again, be a total hero. He's in the papers and he's famous for 5 minutes. Elizabeth is also doing well, hosting a breakfast birthday for Prince Edward and a 22nd birthday party for George, the Prince of Wales. George, the Prince of Wales, is, of course, the guy that's about to become George III. The birthday party ball will be called magnificent. Spain might be our enemy, but Elizabeth will still invite the Spanish ambassador and his missus. Walpole wrote that the missus was homely, but seemed good-humoured and civil. Their son had a high-born ugliness, and their daughter-in-law had a good set of teeth as one can have when one has but two, and those are both black. Who cares? It's jackpot time with the death of George II. See, I told you, the Prince of Wales will be George III in a minute. Elizabeth has hit the big time socially now. People get her in to do their parties. She can bring an impressive guest list. This is not all champagne and reefers, though. Elizabeth will do some work for Teresa Cornelis, a socialite, who, among other things, put on operas without a licence. Now, she'll end up dying in Fleet Street debtor's prison, so yeah, it can be a bit tricky putting on these parties and events. Elizabeth, though, has a Duke bankrolling her parties, which is great, so long as the Duke remains interested in her. She will put on the party of the century for Queen Charlotte's 19th birthday. 1765, and Aunt Anne will die. John Merrill will ask Tom Amos's replacement, Reverend Guy, to write up her death in the New Register. But don't tell anyone about that marriage you see recorded there. Yeah, right, of course. Yeah, the word's out now, and it's going to go round. Time to go travelling for Elizabeth. Why, we all wonder. And, of course, Horace Walpole can tell us, but is he reliable? Oh, well, here goes. The Duke is over because, A, he's got a new floozy, and B, because Elizabeth is a raging hypochondriac attention seeker. Anyway, Elizabeth wants to go to the soothing waters of Carlsbad, and not the American Carlsbad. This would be Karlovy Vary, or Carlsbad in Bohemian. Elizabeth will commission a carriage to be built. Carriage design is all the rage at the moment. There will not be a man in charge of the journey. How weird. She will have a manservant, and the Marquis of Granby has lent her a Swiss hussar, John Knotzel. Elizabeth wants her own maids of honour, so she will take Miss Penrose, the daughter of a Cornish reverend, and Miss Bate, a singer. Now, one of those girls is related to our author, Henry Fielding, who wrote Tom Jones. Can't remember how, sorry. She'll also take an apothecary with her to administer her vomits. You don't know about that. You will, of course, want to take a chalice with you, my dear listener, wouldn't you? Everybody wants a chalice with them. So Emmanuel Cipruttini is along. Off we go to be met by Fred's nephew, William the Fifth, Prince of Orange at The Hague. Then off to Brunswick to chat with Augusta's daughter, Augusta. She had married the Brunswick Wolf and Buttle guy, and that family were a bit shitty that George III married Charlotte of Buggerall Mecklenburg Strelitz. Who's she? She's a nobody, that Charlotte. He should have picked a decent princess like one of theirs. Oh, here's Casanova to have a good gawk at Elizabeth. He will write that she got caught in heavy rain and was wearing a muslin dress. Now, gentlemen listeners, that's kind of like that cheesecloth-y stuff. With just a shift underneath, and so was as good as naked. Casanova tells us that Elizabeth enjoyed it, while the other ladies went looking for shelter. But no, Elizabeth was up for the wet T-shirt competition. But a bit later, she'll be off to the wedding of the Prince of Prussia to the Princess Elizabeth of Brunswick. Fred the Great will write about how Elizabeth got totally pissed and fell over on the dance floor. Oh, dear me, is there nobody there to keep a check on her? No, there's not. But now she can meet the new friend, our composer. Maria Antonia, Dowager Electress of Saxony, has just got a letter from Fred the Great describing Elizabeth getting pissed. So Maria Antonia, of course, is the one who wrote our opening music. She's 3 years younger than Elizabeth. She married the heir to the Elector gig and knocked out 6 kiddies. Maria Antonia is multi-talented. She had a wide-ranging education and musical training. She's a poet, patron of the arts, and an artist herself. Her man inherited the Elector gig and promptly gave her control of the finances. He worked out who was the smart one of this couple. He then managed to die 3 months later, making Maria Antonia the Dowager Electress and regent for a 14-year-old son. She's rather good at diplomacy, and she's going to set up a couple of textile mills and a brewery to get the local economy going. Marvellous stuff. Like your work, Maria Antonia. It's a change from going to war. Neither Elizabeth nor Maria Antonia believe in the limitations of the female gender. Yeah, they just don't believe it. Elizabeth will spend a bit of time there with Maria Antonia, and we have a lifelong friendship being formed. What we also have from the time is letters from diplomatic types complaining. This is English guys. They want to see Elizabeth as a problem, blundering around Europe, people like Maria Antonia and Fred the Great. But their letters smack of jealousy and petty misogyny, so who cares about uppity diplomats?
You are a disgrace. Suck my dick and choke on it. Fuck you.
Yeah, we haven't heard from that guy for ages. He's still fresh, isn't he? Still fresh, yeah. While Elizabeth is off having fun, the Duke was at Bath, a large chunk of Bath being his. Workmen will knock down his Abbey House for new streets, but bugger me, there's some Roman baths there. Our enterprising Duke will hook them up to the original springs used by the Romans and charge 5 shillings a visit. And if you wondered how the Romans kept the baths fresh, well, that's how they did it. They just hooked it up to a spring and water kept flowing through constantly. You can wear bathing clothes or be like the Romans and go totally naked if you wish. Elizabeth can return to her Duke to find that absence had made the heart grow fonder. That's what we want to hear. It's not only the Duke. We're in a time when the newspapers are interested in the lives of the rich and famous. Yeah, that's both then and now, isn't it, my dear listener? And so the reports are favourable on Elizabeth's travels to foreign courts. We can also suspect that a little bit of self-leaking has gone on with reports about letters Elizabeth has received from Fred the Great and Maria Antonia with the warmest professions of regard for the lady. Finally, the newspapers will speculate that Elizabeth has started a trend, that is, women travelling on their own to foreign courts. And they're correct. It will see more great ladies visiting foreign courts coming up soon. Yeah, totally right. Oh, and here's a letter in from Maria Antonia, who is unwell and can't bear to die without seeing Elizabeth one last time. Yeah, I think that might be one of the attractions between these two women. They're both frequently dying. Elizabeth is straight off, and that Maria Antonia will not die. On her return, Elizabeth can brief the court of St. James on how things are going in Europe. Elizabeth at the moment might be at a peak. She's very close to it if she's not there. Her parties are the ones you want an invite to. But Elizabeth is approaching 50, and nasty people are tweeting that she's just trying to hang on to a lost youth. Elizabeth, though, doesn't particularly care. She is at the top of the social ladder, and of course people will try to pull you down. Nothing personal there. Elizabeth will write a rather interesting letter to Lord Bute, who is doing a runner to Europe because he's totally unpopular in England. In it, she tells Bute, who she has got no reason to like, that his enemies will be most upset that he's left. Now they've got nobody to bag or load up with their own faults. Give it time, Bute, old mate, and justice will come round to show your fame. You have a sincere friend and well-wisher in your obedient, humble servant, Elizabeth Chudley. I think it's quite remarkable because it shows that Elizabeth understands how things work. We might see she can't really apply it to herself, but she can apply it to others. It is also very much a feminist letter for me. A letter from a woman who had kicked off as a penniless courtier from Hicksville to a noble Bute who had been the head of government, and she is treating Bute as an equal. What Elizabeth did not know is that Augustus was also a prolific letter writer, but he used pseudonyms, with lots of his letters attacking Bute. But we don't know because he doesn't use his own name, big girl's blouse. He knows about the letter she wrote to Bute and so is pissed off enough to ask for a divorce. The grounds are criminality of conduct. what we might say in our time, my dear listener, is adultery. It was all news to Elizabeth. It's been 25 years, and now all of a sudden, a request for divorce. Really, though, it's not all of a sudden at all. Augustus has been stewing on it for years. He was looking at his naval career and didn't want a divorce to interfere with that. It might be a girl that's triggered him into some action. It seems that he might have been overly hot for Mary Moisey, 24, Augustus being 44. But her dad knew a bit about Augustus, so will give his daughter a big pile of cash to dump the guy. How did her dad know about Augustus, we all wonder? Well, Augustus has a younger brother who will inherit unless Augustus can knock out an heir. Well, I guess it's Augustus's elder brother first, who's dying and he hasn't got any kids, then Augustus, and then this guy, the younger brother. So if he can stop Augustus from knocking out an heir, then he'll be the one to inherit. So that younger brother is the guy that went in and saw the dad and spilled the beans. Even though that one is gone, Augustus has got a bit of an heir bug. He wouldn't mind one. He does have a 4-year-old non-legitimate son whose mum, Kitty Hunter, is another maid of honour. Yeah, she's known to be a bit of an airhead. The divorce idea has started, and we've seen how tough it can be in previous specials. Right now, the rule is a man can sue for divorce, a woman cannot sue for divorce. And it still requires an Act of Parliament to get your divorce. It's expensive and you've got to have a good reason. Female infidelity, if proven, will do it. Male infidelity is not grounds for divorce, my dear listener. We men can fuck around all we like. It's just good fun for us. Wages are crap, so bribing servants is pretty easy for those with cash. Elizabeth's response to this divorce request will be a surprise. Here it is. So, Augustus, if I am your wife and husbands are responsible for a wife's debts, then you need to send me £16,000 that I owe. Has she thought this through? As his wife, her property might also somehow become his. Does Elizabeth want a divorce, we all wonder? Unlikely, because it would only come after she'd been found guilty of adultery, and oh, the shame in a society that runs on total bullshit. That seems to be the case any time also, really, doesn't it? Our society types run on bullshit. But if it is proved that Elizabeth has been into adultery, then, oh no, the Duke might not want to marry her. Elizabeth then will not be assisting in the divorce idea and will consult a few lawyers, including an ecclesiastical lawyer. This guy will come up with a nicely weirdo solution. It goes back to the Norman invasion of 1066, this law. And it is a clause of jacitation of marriage. It means you can sue someone if they boast that they're married to you when they're not married to you. In this case, Augustus would have to prove that they were married. And if he can't prove that they're married, then there is no marriage. Elizabeth could then be free to marry her Duke. Oh, this is turning out all right for her. Elizabeth will file a caveat in an ecclesiastical court. Then it's a note to Augustus letting him know what is going down with a request that would he please confine himself to the proof of marriage argument. That is, no mention of adultery. Nice touch. Augustus may be one of the most, if not the biggest, banger of hot chicks of his generation. But he doesn't want a reputation as a tattletale. No. He wishes to be seen as gallant, and he will articulate it all by saying he is too much of a gentleman to provide proof of adultery for public consumption. Well done, old chap. The only problem, then, is that Augustus had said they're married, so he now feels obliged to prove the case. He should have a good hard think about it and see that he's already been played with the whole please be a gentleman and don't do the adultery stuff. Elizabeth is insisting that she is not married, and my dear listener, we had an entire special on that, didn't we not? Don't ask me then, because if you remember that special, I don't have a clue, as is the case with lots of people with those clandestine marriages and contract marriages. And the only people I would call definitely married are those who did the formal ceremony with a church, with a priest, and a fair dinkum congregation, and all the other stuff as well. The bands, the register, the full Monty. If you didn't do that, then who knows? Elizabeth and Augustus didn't have the full Monty, so they had a clandestine marriage. Augustus was 20 at the time, so he should have had a note from his mum, but he didn't. So he was not legally able to enter into a marriage contract. The ceremony was an out-of-hours thing, conducted late at night. No bands were read. Under the most recent version of the law, which came in after their wedding, it would definitely be illegal. Even without that new law, it's not an open and shut case. Annoyingly for Elizabeth's enemies, she will continue the social life of having fun, fun, fun. She's supposed to be miserable. Augustus was looking for proof of marriage. Five people had been present at that thing. Reverend Tom is dead. Auntie Anne is dead. Mr. Merrill is dead. That leaves Auntie Anne's servant Anne Craddock, who wasn't actually at the thing, but seems to have been watching. There is also the register with two witnesses, the Reverend Tom's witness, Mrs. Amos, and the Winchester attorney, but Augustus doesn't even know that the register exists. Anne Craddock had married Augustus's servant, William Craddock. The widow Amos had been invited to Knightsbridge by Elizabeth and married off to the Duke's butler, Tom Phillips, with the implication that the marriage bought her silence. Depositions will be taken from heaps of people to provide their opinion on whether or not Elizabeth was married. Now, that's just opinion, that's not law. Nah, she's always been Miss Chudley, is the response anyway. She borrows money and buys property under the name Chudley. William Craddock is a bit vague. Heard a bit of gossip, but that's it. Naval types talk about hearsay, but that's not evidence. Anne Craddock will refuse to give evidence saying she's old and infirm, and this was all a long, long time ago. Oh, and here's a payment from Elizabeth to William Craddock for £28 at about the same time. Well, let's have a look at the newspapers, February 1769. Yesterday was determined in the Consistory Court of London the case between the Honourable Mrs. Chudley and the Right Honourable Augustus John Harvey, Esquire, when judgment was pronounced in favour of the lady. She was declared free from any matrimonial contract with the said gentleman. Marvellous result, and the Duke had said that if the result was this, then sure, Elizabeth, let's get hitched. Elizabeth doesn't want to be married to Augustus, who doesn't want to be married to Elizabeth, and Elizabeth doesn't want her affairs aired, and Augustus wants to believe that he is the perfect gentleman, so it is the ideal romance only in reverse. Everyone's a winner. What could possibly go wrong? Just a little bit more of Maria Antonia's music there, the Queen of the Amazon, that's what it's called. Everybody is applauding an ecstatic Elizabeth. Congratulations, winner, and Augustus has had all costs awarded against him. He failed to present all his evidence and so is open to a charge of collusion. Having had a good hard think about it, Augustus is not so sure as Elizabeth is that he is free to marry. And so, having said everyone's a winner, in the cold, hard light of day, Augustus is a loser. In comes a rumour that his baby brother, Fred, the Bishop of Derry, has arrived in town to ensure that whatever the court decided, that he, Fred, then his son, would be inheriting that title, mate. Fred might be a bishop, my dear listener, but in our Georgian tale, he is a villain. Yeah, nasty bit of work. His dear old mum, Molly Lapel, disowned him. Step one for Fred is to come between our lovebirds, Elizabeth, and her Duke. He thinks, oh boy, he thinks, what's he think? He thinks that if Elizabeth marries, then that will be all it takes to tip Augustus over the edge and into a marriage for him. You know, I don't think Augustus cares whether Elizabeth gets married, mate. But anyway, that's what's in Fred's stupid head. Elizabeth had got wind that the bishop was on his way in for a bit of shit fuckery, so she leapt into action. Our Duke's had lots of meetings with Elizabeth's lawyers. He wants to be absolutely certain that he can marry her and it will all be legitimate. Elizabeth's big enemy, Lady Mary Coke, will write, "Miss Chudley has taken an oath that she is not Mr. Harvey's wife, and though everybody knows she is, as the witnesses to the marriage are all dead, she intends marrying the Duke of Kingston. Worse, it was said she was to be presented at court in a bespoke white gown trimmed with a point lace and pearl." Now look, Mary Coke, let me stop you right there and point out that if everybody knows Elizabeth is married, then why, oh why, do you persist in calling her Miss Chudley and not Mrs. Harvey? Our Duke is nothing, though, if not thorough. He now wants a marriage licence issued by the Archie of Canterbury. That should do the trick. Lady Mary Coke will write that she'd heard from Lord Frederick Campbell that the Archie had said no. Yeah, the Archie actually said yes. Lady Mary Coke, you wanker. You should know that the Archie will say yes, show me the money. Yeah, those two things sort of go hand in hand for an Archie, don't they? Marriage time, so the Duke is off to collect the licence from his mate, Dr. Collier. Collier was out, so the Duke and his companion went to dine at the club, as you do. Elizabeth, though, wanted to make certain that everything's happening, so she called on the Duke. Well, he's out, of course, and they don't know where he is, of course. So Elizabeth is off looking for him, even though she doesn't know where he is. She'll be back at his house at the usual time he comes home, and she'll be in a tiz to find he's still out. Oh no, he's still not there. She'll be off home and come back at 5 p.m. because the Duke's always there by 5 p.m. to get dressed. And the Duke will come home just after she gets there. Elizabeth will be sending out guys hither and thither, as they say, to get in lawyers and churchy types. Yeah, great. But did the Duke get the licence? No. It turns out, though, that the thing had been delivered to his house while everybody was out looking for the licence on each other. Yes, you can see where they get those Georgian comedies from, can't you? 8th of March 1769, Elizabeth's 48th birthday and wedding day, with about 40 guests to an apparently a terrible wedding ceremony. The Bishop of Derry is suitably pissed off because his brother Augustus is now free to see that he can marry or something. Yeah, I don't think the Bishop of Derry's thinking that through. The Duke's sister is also pissed off, thinking her branch of the family may now miss out on inheriting. Yeah, well, that's correct, that one. But Elizabeth is happy. She's been hanging out with the Duke for 20 years and will write, "At the end I find myself under the protection of the most perfect man." Elizabeth, the Duchess of Kingston, finally has the security she's always craved. The highest honour a newly married couple can get is to be presented to their majesties, King George III, may he live forever, and Queen Charlotte. Elizabeth will be spending up bigly on a frock for that, but says she has no need of more sparkly gemstones because she already has perhaps the biggest collection of all time. And the mob will surely turn out to look at that sparkly stuff. Diamond necklace given to her by Augusta as a wedding present, and on her left shoulder, a miniature painting of Maria Antonia set in diamonds. That's one's going to start a trend. Yeah, all the chicks will now want to wear portraits, and they'll mainly be of Queen Charlotte. The valet described her as so loaded with jewels, pearls, etc., that she could scarcely move. Indeed, it was thought that no bride ever appeared at St. James's so richly dressed. Elizabeth can get going with the estate at Thoresby. Huge estate with a lovely old forest on it. A lake had been created on it and an island constructed in the middle of the lake. It's got its own mill, bakehouse, dairy, brewhouse, kennels, greenhouses, farm, church, and even a little village with an inn. Elizabeth can do the interior design thingy and some landscape design. Visitors will rave about the place. Sundays are open days when the 18 or so racehorses will be trotted out and we have a flotilla of boats on the lake. Sir John Fielding, the judge and brother of Henry Fielding, the author of Tom Jones. There you go. I think I've got that Tom Jones thing nailed. He'll be sitting on the bank fishing for perch. That's where you'll find him on a Sunday. Elizabeth will be looking for staff who can play a musical instrument. She's got her own little orchestra going at the place with the staff. Along with the staff, she's got her own maids of honour. Our couple are, of course, a bit old to have a family, so they'll be filling the house with guests. It all seems idyllic, sort of. Yeah, the life of the super rich Duke wouldn't be for the likes of me. I wouldn't like it at all. He's got to fill his day somehow, and for our Duke, hunting is the go. Yeah, look, now that sounds all right, but you've got to get your dress just right for the day's hunt, with our Duke changing his clothes up to 4 times before breakfast, until he feels it's just right. His valet has a list of clothes required for a week's hunting. 6 frocks or jackets, 12 waistcoats, 30 pairs of breeches, 20 pairs of different sorts of stockings, 16 shirts, 6 pairs of boots, 6 pairs of half boots, 6 pairs of spatterdashers, 6 pairs of shoes, 6 pairs of gloves, 3 hats. Then you've got to get the coach loaded to the gills with guns and ammo and equipment. Yeah, no thanks, not for me. We should, of course, put a problem in front of Elizabeth by about now. It's the widow of the Reverend Tom. The Reverend Tom is the guy who married Augustus and Elizabeth. So the widow was then married off to the Duke's butler, Tom Phillips, and that was seen as going to buy her silence. To sweeten the deal, Tom Phillips got promoted to the steward of an estate called Home Pierpoint. That was a bad move because Phillips has turned out to be a dick and wants to screw the tenants. So they will complain. Now he seems to just come in and take their stuff without the tenants' knowledge, saying it's just rent that is due. The Duke will be mighty pissed off and Phillips is sacked. His missus, the widow, will write... she's not a widow now, is she? Because he's remarried. His missus, Reverend Tom's widow, will write to Elizabeth, asking her to save Tom's job, and in return, the remainder of our lives shall be passed in gratitude and duty. I don't know. That sounds to me like a hint that bad things may happen if the job is not saved. The answer's going to be no. They're out. Elizabeth's mistress, Princess Augusta, will die not long after learning that her youngest child, Caroline Matilda, the baby born after Frederick's death, now Queen of Denmark, had been imprisoned in a palace coup. Well, that's all very sad. And the Duke will have a stroke. Oh, fuck, we just got him married off to Elizabeth and now he's had a stroke. And it looks like a big one. He's off to Bath and the doctors. Oh dear, it's just got worse, hasn't it? He's in the hands of the doctors. They will do the blister thingy and make him drink lots of water and whatever. None of which will help. 23rd of September, 1773, and it is curtains for the Duke. And Elizabeth can return to London for the reading of the will. Thank you. Can't be quite sure what was going on there, but I'd say the Amazon Queen was probably singing something like "Who Needs Men," and then he started singing "What Have You Got in Your Pants There, Sweetheart," something like that. Elizabeth is taking her time getting back to London. 5 days on the road with lots of weeping and fits along the way, and she's back in the headlines. Mostly it's sympathy for her. Meantime, the Duke's relatives are crapping their dacks because a lot of them have already spent their expected inheritance. Yeah, spending money before you get it, my dear listener. Stupid thing to do. So they are lodging caveats against the heir at law of the Duke from taking out letters of administration. They're just trying to stop everything. The will's being blocked. But we, my dear listener, may need to pop into a rabbit hole to examine some things, and our rabbit hole starts 40 years earlier. Our Duke had a younger sister, Lady Frances Pierpoint, orphaned at 6, and when her big brother, our Duke, set off on his grand tour of Europe, Frances ended up with Auntie Lady Mary Wortley Montagu, who really didn't like the little kid. You see, Lady Mary really liked her brother, Francis's dad, who died shortly after Francis was born. So somehow Lady Mary managed to associate Francis with her lost brother. Lady Mary also hated Francis's mum, which didn't help at all. Francis at least was friends with Lady Mary's daughter, who will go on to marry Lord Bute, won't she? Lady Mary Wortley Montagu is particularly cranky that Frances will not take advice on who to marry. Yeah, Frances, you should listen to her on this one. Sarah Churchill, Duchess of Marlborough, has put up her grandson, John Spencer MP, who is down to inherit. But he is not good-looking, same as his dad, and he's a bore, same as his dad. And the only difference between John and his dad is that John is into chasing after women. Francis is not interested in this guy, and fair enough. Philip Meadows is a second son, and he is chasing Francis relentlessly. Francis will elope with him. Oh, no. Don't do it. No, she's done it. She'll elope with him, and 7 months later, there'll be a baby. That'll happen despite people pointing out that perhaps a second son was more interested in money than her wedded happiness. Lady Mary saw right through Philip Meadows. He was a money grubber, and their firstborn, Evelyn, will take after his dad. Francis will just keep knocking out kiddies, 7 more after Evelyn. It seems that the Duke was keeping them financially afloat, and they were fans of his romance with the married Frenchie de la Touche. Yeah, because so long as the Duke was hanging around with a married Frenchy woman, then he's going to have no legitimate heirs, and they would inherit the whole big estate. And that's great. That's what they want. They want the whole great big estate. Life won't be a lot of fun for Francis. 2 kiddies will die. Evelyn will grow up to be a boozer and a womaniser and a nasty bit of work. Charles, the next one, though, will become a naval captain. William and Edward, 2 younger sons, will be in the military. Tom is disabled, and then there is a daughter, Frances. She will be a maid of honour to Charlotte, but marry dashing soldier Alexander Campbell without anybody's permission at all. Our sweetie Queen Charlotte will forgive her, then Frances can promptly die, leaving Alexander holding a baby. Philip Meadows is shocked because Frances died without her dad and daughter reconciling. Yeah, he never managed to reconcile with her before she died. You idiot dad. As for Frances, the mum, well, we just don't know, but it's not a cheery tale at all. The family stories have it that Philip kept her locked up and abused her. The story goes that eldest lad, Evelyn, likewise abused his mum and his sister. The story put out was that she was mad, that is Frances, the mum. Stories put out that she's mad. Evelyn had also been blamed for breaking the heart of a beautiful and virtuous girl, not named. Not named didn't happen. Worst of all for the Duke, Evelyn had quit his post in the army. On that basis, according to Elizabeth, young Evelyn had been cut out of the will. Not for his womanising, not for his abusing his mother, but for quitting the army. Dereliction of duty is very naughty, according to the Duke. Plus, the story went that the Duke talked to his sister from time to time, who told him stories of her unhappiness due to the bad treatment from her husband and son Evelyn, whose cruelty helped kill his own sister. Elizabeth certainly seemed to believe that Evelyn was a cruel prick who helped kill his sister and also helped kill a man, the Duke. She believed that Evelyn and his dad, Phillips, hated her because she'd reconciled the Duke to his niece, Frances, and her dashing soldier, Alexander Campbell, and it was she, Elizabeth, who was providing for the dear little Campbell baby. Evelyn had also ditched the beautiful and virtuous girl, not named, so it didn't happen for me. Anyway, he ditched her for actress courtesan Clara Haywood, the daughter of an oyster seller who could drink 3 bottles of wine. Her big starring role had been the unfaithful wife Callista in The Fair Penitent, with the review saying she was a very bad actor, but rather nice to look at. Evelyn had rescued her from Charlotte Hay's brother, paying with credit on the basis that he is the rightful heir to the Duke's fortune. Ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, however did we get such a villain into our story? Oh well, we're there, I suppose. Let's have some time pass and see how his brothers are going. Charles studied at Oxford, made it to captain in the Navy, and is serving with distinction. William is now a lieutenant colonel in the Army, and Edward a captain in the Army. Yeah, no bad boys there. The Duke had orders to his porter to never, ever, ever let Evelyn onto the property. Evelyn has borrowed big time against the inheritance that he thinks he's going to get. £6,000 just from his brother Charles. His dad, Philip, is also expecting to get a big handout from the will, so perhaps we should have a look at the bloody will, I suppose. That might be handy. The Duke had left the physical will with his good mate, the Duke of Newcastle. The Meadows mob have arrived, as well as various lawyers. The Meadows family are quietly confident that they're going to inherit. There's been a newspaper report. We are assured that the Right Honourable Lady Frances Meadow, only sister of the late Duke of Kingston, will become the Countess of Kingston and Baroness of Pierpoint in her own right. Yeah, that'll be wrong. The Duke actually wrote out his will personally. He wanted it to be in his own handwriting to avoid any dispute. It prioritises his dearest darling, Mrs. Elizabeth. She gets the lot for a lifetime so long as she doesn't remarry. If she dies or remarries, then the lot will go not to Philip Meadows, nor to Evelyn Meadows, but to Charles Meadows, and then to his kiddies. And if he dies without kiddies, then it goes to the younger brothers and their heirs, and if all that fails, then to the sons of his mate, the Duke of Newcastle. Philip Meadows and Evelyn Meadows can have nothing, nor will they ever bloody well inherit. Yeah, there you go. The Duke's been pretty clear about that. The servants get money, the friends get money, and they're right at the end, a last-minute codicil. Evelyn Meadows can have £500. Philip Meadows is so upset he's boo-hoo-hooing. He married Frances specifically to get his hands on this loot, and he's got nothing. Evelyn is in a rage. It's all Elizabeth's fault. Elizabeth must have forced the Duke into writing this will. Look at the witnesses, aren't they lower class types? Ooh, that's suspicious. And the media will be very nasty, as the media is. Elizabeth will be subject to all sorts of nasty commentary. Elizabeth may be blissfully ignorant of it all. She's doing the funeral of the century. professional mourners line the driveway, holding black feathers, and everything in the house is black, even the cloths to clean, the pots and pans are black. Elizabeth will receive visitors while sitting up in a bed with black sheets, draped with black curtains, in a gloomy room with just one candle. The dead Duke will make a 6-day trip to the family mausoleum at Home Pierpoint. Along the way, we've got tons of mourners coming out. Elizabeth stage managed the whole proceedings. There'll be a 61 cannon salute and lots of big swinging dicks turn up with lots and lots of common smellies. Flags all over the country are at half mast. It's all magnificent.
And I couple this shit all the time and I'm sick of it. Absolutely sick of it.
Well, I think Elizabeth's just read a paper and, honey, there's going to be more of that, I'm afraid. Elizabeth will start executing various bits of the will. The Meadows family will start plotting. Elizabeth will remove the best furniture, pictures and plate to be put somewhere safe. She'll be off out of England and away from the problems. Maria Antonia will arrange an introduction to Giovanni Vincenzo Antonio Ganganelli, a.k.a. Pope Clement XIV. He'd been a Franciscan. That's amazing, isn't it? Franciscan making it to Pope. So all we can say really is how the world has changed. And Clement wants more change. He will declare the suppression of the Society of Jesus. Yeah, those Jesuits are being booted out with all their bloody interfering with politics. Elizabeth is off to Rome, and we haven't been there for a while ourselves, have we, my dear listener? You would still find farm animals in Rome wandering around and just crapping wherever. It's not just the animals. The common smellies are also okay with just crapping wherever. The swamps are still there. They haven't been drained yet. But there are pretty churches to look at, and there's public fountains. Yeah, it's not all that bad. It is bad. It'll be smelly. It's only the rich who get to travel to Rome, so tourists are kind of embraced because they got money to spend on the local economy. Elizabeth was unusual for being that female lone tourist. Now, Pope was also an Anglophile, so that was marvellous for English tourists like Elizabeth. He's very friendly. And Rome is evolving from a Jacobite refuge to a Hanoverian destination. Now, it has just occurred to me, I'm just going to pause myself here and say, you're probably wondering how long, actually, Elizabeth and the Duke were married. Well, it turns out it was nearly 4 years, somewhere around there, about 4 years, that they managed to marry before he died. So, some happiness, I suppose. Elizabeth will splash some cash with the Irish Franciscans, giving her a bunch of guys to look after her in Rome. Off she goes to meet the Pope, and they will get on very nicely. Elizabeth, like your podcaster, will avoid her countrymen in Rome. Yeah, I don't travel overseas to meet Australians, thanks. For Elizabeth, it is particularly avoid Prince Henry, the royal idiot, and Prince William, George's younger brothers who had married without permission. Elizabeth, of course, had met these guys when they were just babies, but right now she does not want to upset George by hanging out with them. Oh, look, the paper sent her a snuff box with a portrait on it. That's a nice souvenir. After a few months, Elizabeth is matey with plenty of people, like cardinals and other churchy types. Her Italian is coming along nicely. Oh, and now she's hosting a salon. Artists are coming in, and visiting Englishmen want to learn from Elizabeth. Yeah, so she's trying to avoid them, but they're not trying to avoid her. Another regular to her house will be the poet Vasily Petrov, who can get us started on learning Russian. Now, while Elizabeth has been in Rome learning new languages, the Meadows family have been at work. The new heir, Charles Meadows, he is now the one after Elizabeth, thinks that he can now afford to get married. Hello, Anne Mills. And all the happy couple need is for Elizabeth to drop off a perch and they'll be one of the 1% super wealthy brigade. That's all lovely and romantic, but not lovely or romantic is older brother Evelyn. The only way he can see clear that he will inherit is to blow everything up. And so that's what his aim is. If everything is gone, then he might be considered the eldest legitimate heir. Everyone sees the way to doing this is to totally invalidate the will by destroying the marriage of Elizabeth to the Duke. Here's the thing, my dear listener. We have these stories about people like Elizabeth and the Duke living the lives of the super rich, but perhaps from time to time we should think about all those servants required to do stuff for them. Like empty out the bedpans, wipe their bot, or iron their shoelaces. These servants are paid the least amount the super rich can get away with, and they are not always treated nicely. Their lives are pretty crap. Boring, mundane shit work for shit pay from shit people. On that basis, it's not hard for Evelyn to get plenty of servants to tell stories about the Duke and Elizabeth. First up will be the Duke's former valet, who is now out of a job. He never liked Elizabeth, and so will tell how the Duke was powerless under the ill-treatment of Elizabeth. Evelyn will ask the valet to go with him to Bristol to find the Reverend Tom's widow. Payment to be made, of course. They will find the widow, she and her husband, are, of course, broke, because they got sacked from the home Pierpoint gig. And so she's not happy with Elizabeth either, because Elizabeth didn't save the job. It was her first husband, of course, who had created the register showing the marriage of Elizabeth to Augustus. And now there'll be a stroke of luck for Evelyn. He kept his horses with John Fozard, who had worked as a groom to the Duke and married one of Elizabeth's maids. He said, look, there's a witness, Mrs. Craddock, who saw Elizabeth and Augustus wedded and bedded. Mrs. Craddock now lives in London, and she's fallen out with Elizabeth. Yeah, of course she fucking has. Mrs. Craddock, formerly the maid to Auntie Anne, is by now the only living witness to the Augustus-Elizabeth wedding. She had wanted cash for silence, and Elizabeth had paid her. But once Elizabeth had the special wedding license to marry the Duke from the Archie, things changed. One of those things was that Anne, who continually said she was flat broke, turned out to have some money, and Elizabeth found out, so Elizabeth stopped paying her. Mrs. Craddock is still willing to talk for a fee, and Evelyn is happy to promise that fee. A complaint against Elizabeth will be filed in the Court of Chancery by Philip and Frances Meadows. Elizabeth is accused of threats and menaces against the Duke to coerce him into writing the will that she wanted. Her lawyers will write to her saying, just don't come back to England. But the letter they sent was sent just as she was on her way home. She will arrive home with a prosecution for bigamy ready to meet her. With the estate the size that it is, lawyers on both sides are not in any sort of rush to sort this out, thanks. We'd like this to drag on for years, if that's okay, because our fees will just keep on going. But Elizabeth isn't stupid. She won't be unpacking. She'll just be straight back to Dover for the first water Uber out of there. Thanks. Elizabeth is headed back to Rome, with the gossip magazines in England going crazy with stories. Oh dear, it seems those Jesuits have slipped a bit of rat poison into Clement XIV's porridge, and he's off to meet his maker. Bugger. Clement had given her a heap of papal dispensations, and yeah, there's still a thing. Tax exemptions, mostly. Clement XIV had met Mozart, took him into the Sistine Chapel and let him hear the Miseri Mei Deus by Allegri, Psalm 51 for the rest of us. Have mercy upon me, O God, according to thy loving kindness, according unto the multitude of thy tender mercies. Blot out my transgressions. Yeah, sure, but there won't be any bloody mercy for anyone who plays this thing outside the Sistine Chapel. No mercy for that at all. It is the death penalty. Yeah, you'll get killed for playing this thing outside the Sistine Chapel. It's just the bloody Catholics wanting their mystery religion to have a bit more mystery to it. Mozart, though, having heard it just once, could write out the whole thing. Nine-part polyphony is simple work for Mozart. Yeah, because we live in the 21st century, we don't have to die, we can listen to it. Isn't that great? It's all about Elizabeth, who does not want to break in a new pope, so she thought, perhaps I might go to France. She will ask her mate, Maria Antonia, to arrange an introduction to Marie Antoinette. But she's got to go to Rome first to pick up her luggage. Yeah, that'll take a while. Meanwhile, back in England, Augustus's big brother, Lord Bristol, he's really on death's door this time. Yeah, he's really not well. That might get the younger brother, the Bishop of Derry, interested in proving that Augustus is married to Elizabeth. That would then stop Augustus from marrying somebody else and knocking out an heir. Elizabeth has arrived in Rome just as the cardinals are meeting to pick a new pope, and it's at time. Every 25 years, they open the holy door at St. Peter's Basilica. Just one of the millions of bits of pomp and ceremony invented by the Catholic Church as a money earner. Elizabeth has a house thanks to a cardinal, and by now is a well-known figure in Rome. She's seen as a kind of eccentric English woman, and lots of people go to visit her. She's a one-woman show. She's entertaining. Meanwhile, in England, a grand jury has considered a bill of indictment for bigamy and decided there was sufficient evidence to proceed. The newspapers speculate that the lady concerned will most likely stay away and so will be declared an outlaw. The previous charge had been a civil case, but this one is a criminal case and much more serious. Fortunately, bigamy is one of the crimes that is no longer a capital offence. Elizabeth does not face a hanging, but what she does face is branding or the slammer or transportation. The Meadows are proceeding with their civil case and concerned that Elizabeth is spending the family fortune, so they're looking for an injunction to block her taking stuff out of England. That will meander through the legal system, and eventually the Lord Chancellor will point out that the bill names Elizabeth Chudley. And one thing is certain, one thing we know for sure, there's no longer an Elizabeth Chudley. So the action's tossed out, and the money, which has been blocked, will flow to Elizabeth again. Elizabeth will get word that she is now up on a bigamy charge. She'll say, hey, hang on a tick. If the judgment of the ecclesiastical court and the Archie don't hold water, then there is no religion in our country. Elizabeth, though, will say that she's going to come to England to face trial. In the meantime, the estate assets have been successfully frozen, and the Meadows were right to worry that she was spending up big time, because she was. Here comes her yacht sailing right on up the Tiber. Papal dispensation required to bring your yacht up the Tiber, and she'd received it. But that's where we'll be leaving it for this week. Next week we'll tidy up her story and get back to the main game, I think, of George the Third. Just a little bit of singing there from the Mamuna tribe of South Papua to get us into some historical fiction. And this week I thought I'd better have a look at the TV series Tom Jones put out in 2023. Four episodes and perhaps an updating of the story, because we've got our heroine, Sophie, is a black woman in this one. But they picked a marvellous actress for it, really, really wonderful actress who did a terrific job of Sophie. Tom Jones has plenty of romps with women, but generally speaking, it's he who gets seduced by the women, so I guess that kind of makes it a bit okay. I don't know. It's hard to tell. Sophie, of course, has to remain a virgin until she marries Tom. But the Tom Jones story originated around about Where We Are, written by Henry Fielding, who tried to make money from being an author, but found he couldn't get a living out of it, so He was also a judge. But, of course, he's been unaware of just how successful his novel Tom Jones was. And Tom Jones was really one of the first novels that we had in England. We've had plenty of storytelling, but this is pretty much our first novel. I can thoroughly recommend Tom Jones, the TV series, for you. 4 episodes, I think I've said that. And I think you'd rather enjoy it. So it's a recommendation for this week. But for us, it is just a matter of what we go out with. And a song that would probably suit poor old Elizabeth at the moment, because she's about to cop it in the press even more, would be Frankie Miller, the Scottish guy, and the song The Devil Gun. So that's what we're going out with. Hope to see you next week. Bye.